Thank you so much for sticking along. I also wanted to thank my co-authors, my advisor Amy Choi, as well as colleagues from Malawi, Frank Taulo and Josephine, who were part of this study. So our research tries to understand why do high parity Malawian couples fail to achieve the desired family size. I have nothing to disclose. So just to begin by giving you an overview of the study, the study uses qualitative data from high parity couples in Malawi to understand the social context of their lives, how that affects their marital relationship dynamics, and all of this in turn affects their contraceptive use. So why is this important? So more on unmet need. Reducing unmet need for contraceptives is a major challenge family planning programs continue to face. And unmet need is important because reduction of unmet need is directly associated with the reduction of unintended pregnancies. In fact, if all unmet need for effective contraceptives is fulfilled, 54 million unintended pregnancies could be averted annually worldwide. Moreover, while economic and service delivery issues are important in generation of unmet need, more and more evidence is also bringing out the importance of social opposition, lack of knowledge, and side effects as causing unmet need. Hence, it's been said that programs that go beyond traditional boundaries of service provision and attempt at altering cultural and familial factors preventing contraceptive use are more likely to be effective. So just a little bit about Malawi. Malawi is a country in southeastern Africa. It ranks among the world's most densely populated and least developed countries. It's ranked among the 20 poorest countries in the world. In terms of its family planning indicators, 26% of Malawian women continue to have an unmet need for contraceptives. And this is a level that has remained unchanged since 2004, when it was about 28%. However, the prevalence of modern contraceptives is very high in Malawi, and it's been increasing. It was about 28% in 2004, and in 2010, it was about 42%. So high parity couples, for the purposes of this study, were defined as couples with four or more living children, and they're a high-risk group and with a greater unmet need, and hence the focus on this particular group. Also, there's evidence to suggest in Malawi that the percentage of women desiring to limit family size at parity 4 in this group has been increasing. It was about 58% in 2004 and has gone up to 62.8% in 2010. We draw on the sociological perspectives as well as the theory of interdependence for conceptualizing and the analysis of the study. The sociological perspective helps us understand the broader social context of couples' lives, and the theory of interdependence specifically helps us understand the interpersonal context of couple relationships. The specific research questions were, what are the pathways in the social context influencing couple relationship dynamics? Secondly, how do these contextual pathways in turn influence couple processes affect contraceptive use? In terms of the methodology, participants were recruited using a purposive sampling strategy at local family planning service sites. Females were first recruited into the study, and once they agreed to participate, they were asked if their husbands would also participate in the study. The study was conducted in five pre-selected districts of Malawi, which spans the three main regions of the country and included an urban as well as a rural site. Data was collected using both focus group discussions as well as in-depth interviews. In all, 20 in-depth interviews and 20 focus group discussions were conducted involving 159 participants. Data was analyzed using accepted qualitative techniques of identification of recurrent patterns and themes. A coding scheme was developed and coding performed using NBVO, and there were two coders, and so all the iteration process happened. In terms of the results, just a brief overview of the study participants' characteristics. There were 77 men and 82 women who participated in the study. The average age of males in the study was 40 years, whereas females was about 35 years, and the mean parity among the couples was 5.5 children. Going into the themes, one of the major themes that kept recurring across participants, districts, as well as sex, was a gap between participants' expressed intention to limit family size and their failure to do so. Time and time again, participants spoke about how they wanted to limit their family size to four or five children, but at the point that they were discussing this, they had already surpassed that number. So in trying to understand why there was this dissonance between fertility desires and intentions of the couples, some of the important themes that came up in the discussions was the importance of children and fertility for a marriage and for marital stability. Children were seen as something that strengthened a marital bond, and it was very important to have children before you could ensure that a marriage was more permanent and long-term. And bearing children was important for both men as well as for women. For men, they would only command respect in the communities after they bore children, whereas for women, it was the utmost responsibility within marriage to produce children, and it was grounds for the husbands to leave them or bring in co-wives if they failed to do so. In addition, there was also a culture of silence around contraceptive use. And this was especially the case in the beginning of a marital relationship. And there were several reasons that came up as to why this culture of silence was being promoted. Firstly, just building on the earlier point, given the importance of children in a marriage and the fact that they were seen as strengthening the marriage, it was very difficult for a young couple especially to bring up the issue of contraception right in the beginning because they were supposed to reproduce before starting spacing or doing any other thing like that. Moreover, connected to this, there was also a belief that you have to first establish your reproductive capability before you start contracepting. And on top of all of this, you know, in a culture where there was polygyny and extramarital sex was a possibility, there were marital insecurities. And there were somehow perceptions in the community that if a spouse brought up the issue of using contraceptives, they wanted to go outside the marriage and engage in extramarital sex, and this made it difficult, again, for spouses to be the first person in a relationship to bring up the issue because it generated a lot of anxieties. There were also gender power differentials. It was the context within which communications and decision-making around these issues happened. For instance, men often perceived their desires around children as taking precedence over women's health and other issues. Moreover, women's initiative in the contraceptive arena was not always appreciated, and this was sad because often women had more knowledge and information about the contraceptive methods. Moreover, beyond this, there were also ideas about the ideal sex composition of a family, and sometimes couples in trying to pursue and getting to that composition ended up with bigger families than they had wanted. Beyond the couple and the marriage, there were also the extended family that had a very important role to play, and they were very interested in the contraceptive decision-making journey of the couples. While both men and women complained about the interference of parents-in-laws, interestingly, there were more complaints among the men about the interference of parents-in-laws. Parents-in-laws often suspected the motives of their sons, if they were sons-in-laws, if they're trying to limit their family size as an indication that they were trying to limit the fertility of their daughters so as to bring in more co-wives. Beyond the family, the community was also not the best place in terms of using modern contraception. One thing that came up was limiting family size was not recognized as a choice that couples made for the welfare of their family. And often the communities saw the adoption of family planning methods as a response to some sort of a crisis that the family was going through, either a financial crisis or a health crisis, which forced them into using contraception. And in this light, many couples using contraceptives are taunted as infertile or incapable of reproducing. Moving into the discussion, so the themes highlight how the contraceptive decision-making journey of a couple evolves, and in the process, unmet need is generated. Contraceptive use does not occur in isolation. At the very least, it requires the cooperation of two individuals in a sexual relationship. Moreover, couple relationships are also negotiated within boundaries of marriage, family, and community. And this is the context where spouses formulate the reproductive desires and intentions. Also, both men and women are affected by the prevailing gender and cultural systems. In addition, reproductive desires, intentions, unmet needs, they have a trajectory of change, and they change as the couple's relationship evolves. So what are the implications? One thing is it's important to understand the broader cultural and gender systems to understand unmet need. Moreover, given the fact that we know that unmet need shifts across a couple's relationship trajectory, it's important to have longitudinal studies to sort of understand how this evolves and how then programs can intervene and help couples appropriately based on their relationship span. In addition, while we've done a great job in quantifying unmet need, moving forward, there's also a need to develop reliable and valid scales that can measure the processes and mechanisms of unmet need so that we know when to intervene and, again, how best programs can address the needs of people. In addition, family planning research could benefit from positive deviance approaches that are often used in other areas of public health, because no matter what the circumstances, some couples still manage to use contraceptives. So in trying to understand what makes them different and how do they use contraceptives and what are the processes and mechanisms that they follow would really benefit programmatic interventions. Thank you. Any questions? Questions? I mean, I think stigma was definitely there. There was this notion that contraceptive use, like I said, always happens when there's a crisis in the family. Because if you're rich and if you can afford to have larger children, you should be having more children. So if you're trying to limit your family size, either means that the man is not man enough, is not able to, you know, bring in more resources into the family, or there's some sort of fertility issue within the couple. So that was the first sort of, you know, idea that. And even the couples who were using contraceptives, in the end, you know, after 6 or 7 children, when they started using, their reasons were like, oh, my wife had gone through so many pregnancies, she was so unwell, you know, so I decided to let's stop this, or it was, we had no money left, so we had to sort of somehow. So it seemed like even among the users, this was the reason why they were sort of, you know, using. So that, and this is a place where there's a lot of contraceptive prevalence, it's pretty high. And the uptake is increasing. And there's also, of course, covert use because of this. You know, women sometimes hide it from their husbands because there's no other way. And it's pretty high in Malawi. In Malawi, they have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of these health centers. Where you get free family planning. And there was also this Marie Stope Clinics where you can actually buy services. So the different ways that you can get. And I guess you can also get them in, you know, pharmacies, like, you know, condoms and things like that. Not, of course, things that more long-term methods. So, yes. Thank you.